All About the Angels. A truly beautiful book. It opens up a new and glorious world to its readers. It gives them a happiness and joy they never had before. It is a book for all priests and people, young and old, by Father Paul O'Sullivan, O.P. A letter from the Apostolic Nunciature to Father Paul O'Sullivan. Many thanks for sending me the beautiful little book on the angels which you have just published. It comes at a most opportune moment, for in the present state of unrest and suffering in the world, no better remedy can be found than the all-powerful protection of God's glorious angels. The doctrine of Holy Church on these blessed spirits is most consoling and should be thoroughly understood by all Christians. The angels are our best friends, and you tell your readers all about them in a manner so clear and interesting that the perusal of your book will certainly awaken a great love for and confidence in these glorious princes of heaven. In return, the angels will obtain for us many graces and deliver us from many evils. I remain with the highest esteem, yours very sincerely, Peter Siriazzi, Apostolic Nuncio. The Foreword. Why ignore our best friends? Make friends with the angels is the advice which the great Pope, St. Leo, gives every Christian, and it is an advice that everyone should follow. If we make friends with the angels, and nothing is easier, we shall receive innumerable and great favors which otherwise we shall never obtain. Our angel friends, too, will shield and protect us from countless dangers, evils, sickness, and accidents which, without their help, we could not possibly avoid. In a word, these all-powerful and loving protectors will secure for us a degree of happiness that without their assistance we could not hope for in this vale of tears. Another reason why we should make friends with the angels is that they are our dearest and best friends. A good friend, that is, a friend who is able and always ready to help us, a friend to whom we can have recourse in all our troubles and sorrows, is one of the greatest blessings God can give us. Our human hearts thirst for love and sympathy. Among men, we rarely or never find such a friend, but this is not so with the angels. They are most desirous to be our friends, and they love us with all the intensity of their angelic natures. Since they are all-powerful and generous, we can have the fullest confidence in their help and friendship. The one friendship on this earth that gives us any idea of the love of the angels is the affection of a mother. This is the purest, the most generous, the strongest of all human loves. The mother loves her children with unbounded affection. God has placed in the mother's heart an instinct of love so great that it almost borders on the supernatural. She forgets herself and thinks only of her children. She works for them, sacrifices herself for them, and gives them her all. If one of them should fall sick or be plunged in some great sorrow, to that one she devotes a more special gentleness and more loving care. We sometimes see a frail woman watch by the bedside of her sick child, eating little, resting little, consumed with the poignant anxiety, for 10, 20, even 30 days, never complaining, never faltering. When these days of anguish and bitterness are past, this almost superhuman effort, these long, weary vigils, seem to have cost her nothing. The mother's love sustained her. Yet strong men who lose their sleep for 2 or 3 consecutive nights complain that they find it hard to work the following day. If a poor, frail mother, she may be young or old, rich or poor, full of weaknesses and imperfections, can rise to such a height of love and abnegation as this, what may we not expect from God's angels, who have no defects, no imperfections, and who love us with all the mighty power of their glorious angelic natures? The teaching of the Church about the angels is most beautiful and consoling, but unfortunately many Christians have scant knowledge of the great angel world. They know little about these blessed spirits, love them little, and seldom pray to them. Worst of all, they do not realize their presence. They show no confidence in them, and they do not call on them for help when dangers and difficulties press around. As a result, they forfeit 1,000 blessings that they might easily enjoy, and fall victims to 1,000 accidents that they might have easily avoided. How comes it that the angels are so little known and loved? Simply because many whose duty it is to teach this most important doctrine are gravely negligent in fulfilling their obligation. First of all, Christian mothers should instill deeply into the minds of their children a clear, vivid, and abiding sense of the presence of their dear angels. It is not sufficient to give them vague, hazy, insufficient notions of these blessed spirits, nor is it enough to teach them to say a short prayer at morning and at night to their angel guardians. They should devote much time and much attention to this all-important subject. Children must be taught constantly, from their tenderest years, to have a real love and friendship for their angels, to have boundless confidence in them. They must be accustomed to feel and realize the personal presence of their angels, to call on them in all their fears and troubles. How much better this would be than that the children should have their heads filled with foolish fear of ghosts and hobgoblins, as so frequently happens. Mothers who impress on their children this great lesson confer on them inestimable blessings during all the long years of their lives. On the other hand, if they neglect this duty or make light of it, they do a great wrong to their dear ones, for they deprive them of the best and the most powerful friends. Catechists, too, and teachers of the young in schools, colleges, and convents are frequently remiss in teaching those in their charge all about the blessed angels. The minds of their pupils are developing, and the teaching of the mothers in the home, no matter how good it might have been, must be perfected and developed. Professors of older students, boys and girls, are perhaps the greater offenders. They rarely mention the subject of the angels in their classes. Why? Do not the angels exist? Are they not our best friends? Is there not much to be said about them? Priests, of course, can do much to remedy the neglect of parents and teachers by preaching at times on the angels, by wise counsels in the confessional, and by exhorting the faithful to read books on the angels. Priests who do so receive most striking graces. The object of this book. There are few books published about the angels, and these few are mostly doctrinal and abstruse. They do not appeal to the general public and fail to create in the heart of the ordinary reader that love and trust they should have in the angels. It is so different in the case of the saints. There are innumerable books attractively written about these great servants of God, which help us to know them, to love them, and to follow their example. There are also pictures of all kinds, large and small, of the saints, which we hang on our walls, place on our work table, or use in our prayer books. We thus live, as it were, in the presence and company of the saints. Pictures of the angels are few, and to a certain extent misleading, because the angel is, as a rule, represented as guiding little children, whereas adults should, with equal reason, be reminded of their angels and have suitable pictures of them. In the sacred scriptures, angels are pictured as helping Abraham and Jacob, Elias and Daniel, Agar and Judith, Peter and Paul, all adults. The object of these pages is to awaken in the hearts of our readers a real love and friendship for the holy angels, and abiding confidence in them, above all, to make them realize and feel vividly the presence of these loving spirits ever by their sides. Our plan? At the cost of inverting the natural order of our book, we will commence by relating some of the modern and best authenticated apparitions of angels. We do this, first of all, to stimulate the interest of our readers, and secondly, because many seem to think that angelic apparitions are a thing of the past. We shall then, following the doctrine of St. Thomas, tell our readers all about the angels, who they are, what they're doing, where they are, how beautiful, how lovable, how powerful, how eager they are to help us, and what great advantages we gain by honoring and loving these great princes of heaven. Next, we will recall some of the beautiful stories of the angels which we find in the sacred scriptures, in the lives of the martyrs and other saints. In the course of our book, we quote striking and well-authenticated incidents from the lives of men and women, boys and girls, living in the world like ourselves. These facts have a special value as they go to show how ready the dear angels are to help not only saints, but all who love them, no matter how modest these may be. We humbly ask the dear angels to help us in this work of love. Chapter 1. The Apparitions of the Angel Guardian of Portugal in the year 1916. We cannot begin our little book on the angels better than by giving an accurate and authoritative account of the apparitions of the guardian angel of Portugal in Fatima. These are perhaps the most striking and best authenticated angelic apparitions of modern times. Portugal has received many and great blessings during the long years of her history. To mention a few, she was for many centuries one of the greatest Catholic nations in the world, we might perhaps say the greatest. She discovered and conquered half the present known world in less than 100 years, which was certainly a wonderful feat. But she did more. She Christianized her vast empire with a care and humanity that has never been surpassed. The best authorities bear witness to this fact, and the Church has fully recognized it by granting many notable privileges to the Catholics of Portugal, privileges which they still continue to enjoy. A second great favor was the extraordinary devotion of the Blessed Sacrament, which gives her a claim to the glorious title of the Land of the Eucharist. A third outstanding grace bestowed on this favored country was the exceptional love and devotion to our Blessed Lady, which began with the first king of Portugal and was continued by his successors, who held themselves bound to insist on and maintain the solemn consecration of the realm to Mary Immaculate, whom they chose for their patroness and protectress. Later on, kings offered the royal crown to Mary so that for long years the kings of Portugal never wore the royal diadem. The crowning grace, however, was reserved for our own days when in May 1917 and the following 5 months, God's Holy Mother appeared in Fatima, establishing there one of the most glorious Marian sanctuaries in the world. An outstanding feature of these apparitions, and one that none other of her sanctuaries can claim, is the appearance of the Angel Guardian of Portugal in 1916, the year preceding the apparitions. The glorious archangel appeared on three occasions and in three different places to the privileged children who were destined to see Our Lady. He taught them how to pray and sanctify themselves, assuring them that Jesus and Mary had special designs for them, thus preparing them for the coming of God's Holy Mother the following year, 1917. The following is an exact account of these angelic apparitions. The First Vision of the Angel. The eldest of the three children to whom Our Lady appeared, now known as Sister Lucy, tells us in her own simple language how the Angel of Portugal appeared to her and her cousins, Jacinta and Francis, three times. She did not remember the exact date of these apparitions, for she says, "At that time I made no account of months or weeks or days." She was an uncultured little peasant girl. It was sometime in the spring of 1916 that Jacinta, Francis, and I were minding our sheep in a place called Choça Vela. It was in the morning, and a light rain like dew began to fall as we went up the side of the hill with our sheep, looking for a rock someplace where we could shelter ourselves from the rain. In the midst of an olive grove, we found a cave which we entered for the first time. When the rain had cleared off, we still lingered there some time, ate our lunch, and said our rosary. After this, we began to play with some stones. Suddenly, though the day was very mild, a strong wind began to sway the branches of the tree, and we glanced up to see the cause of it. We saw over the trees a light as white as snow, and in the midst of it the form of a young man, as brilliant as crystal when it is lit up by the light of the sun. As he approached us, we began to see his features clearly. We were surprised, absorbed by what we saw, but said not a word. On coming near us, he said, "Don't be afraid. I am the angel of peace. Pray with me." Then, kneeling on the ground, he bent his head low, and we, moved by a supernatural inspiration, imitated him and repeated the words that we heard him say. "My God, I believe, I adore, I hope in you, and I love you. I ask you to pardon those who do not believe, adore, hope in, and love you." After saying these words three times, he arose and said to us, "Pray thus. The hearts of Jesus and Mary are listening to the voice of your supplications." He then disappeared. The supernatural feeling that had taken possession of us was so intense that we did not even think of our own existence. We remained for a long time as the angel had left us, repeating over and over the same prayer. We felt the presence of God so overpowering and so intimate in our souls that we did not even dare to speak of it among ourselves. Next day, we still felt the same intense feeling of God's presence, which only after the lapse of some time began to lessen. We did not think of speaking of the apparition, nor did we make any agreement to keep it secret. The apparition itself seemed to impose silence on us. We did not say a word about it. Perhaps it made more impression on us, as it was the first apparition which we had had. The second vision of the angel was in the heat of summer. We went to pass the hour of the great heat of the day in the shade of some trees, in a place called Arniero. Suddenly we saw the same angel near us. He said, "What are you doing? Pray, pray much. The hearts of Jesus and Mary have special designs of mercy on you. Offer constantly to the Most High prayers and sacrifices." "What sacrifices?" I asked. "Offer a sacrifice of everything you can in reparation for the sins which offend him, and in supplication for the conversion of sinners. Obtain for our country peace. I am the guardian angel of Portugal. Above all, accept and bear with resignation the sufferings our Lord will send you." These words of the angel engraved themselves on our hearts like a light, which made us see who God was, how he loved us, and how he wished us to love him. It made us understand the value of sacrifice, how pleasing it is to God, and how he converts sinners by means of it. Therefore, from that moment, we began to offer to God everything that mortified us or caused us pain, without seeking to do other penances, except indeed to repeat for hours, prostrate on the earth, the prayer the angel had taught us. The third vision was at the end of October or beginning of November, for as I've said, I did not in those days make a count of days or weeks. This third vision took place in an olive grove belonging to my parents, called Pregira. We had said our rosary and the prayer that the angel had taught us in the first vision. He now appeared to us with a chalice in his hand, and over it a host, from which drops of blood fell into the chalice. Leaving the chalice and the host suspended in the air, he prostrated himself on the earth and repeated the following prayer three times. "Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, I adore you profoundly and offer you the most precious body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, present in all the tabernacles of the world, in reparation for all the outrages, sacrileges, and indifference with which he is offended. And by the infinite merits of his most sacred heart and the Immaculate Heart of Mary, ask you for the conversion of poor sinners." He then arose and again took the chalice. To me he gave the host, and to Jacinta and Francis he gave what was in the chalice, saying, "Take and drink the body and blood of Jesus Christ, horribly outraged by ungrateful men. Make reparation for their crimes and console our God." Once more he prostrated himself on the earth and repeated three times the same prayer, "Most Holy Trinity," and then disappeared. Overcome by supernatural emotion, we imitated the angel and did all that he had done. The feeling of the divine presence overcame us, and as it were annihilated us completely. It seemed to deprive us of the use of our corporal senses for a long time. During these days, we performed our material actions as if impelled by this supernatural force. The peace and happiness which we enjoyed were great and intimate. Our souls were completely wrapped up in God. The physical weakness we felt was also great. The apparitions of our Blessed Lady, later on, produced different effects on us. We enjoyed the same intimate joy, peace, and happiness, but instead of physical prostration, we felt a certain energy. Instead of annihilation in the presence of God, we felt exaltation and joy. Instead of any difficulty in speaking, we felt an enthusiasm in communicating what we had seen and heard, though indeed we felt a strong inspiration to keep some things secret. Our space does not allow of our entering more fully into the story of the beautiful lives of these dear little peasant children of Fatima, so highly honored by God's Holy Mother. We merely wish to accentuate one fact, and that is the amazing results produced in them by the angels' visits. No master of the spiritual life could instill into our minds such lofty ideals, such heroic courage, such unbounded generosity in doing God's will. Let this be a lesson to us, for if we are devout to our own dear angel guardian, he too will most certainly raise us up to a great height of sanctity and obtain for us the very greatest graces. Why did the angel appear in Portugal? Although every country, every kingdom, and every province has its angel guardian, we know of no other nation in modern times whose angel has appeared as in Portugal. Can we offer any explanation for this exceptional honor? Perhaps the answer lies in the fact that Portugal has had from the earliest times a very special love for the angels, as the following facts go to show. Her first king, D. Alfonso Henrique, a man eminent not only for his military prowess, but also for his truly Christian life, had a very marked love for the angels, notably for his angel guardian and for Saint Michael, the Prince of the Heavenly Host. We find this devotion mentioned in some of the old Portuguese chronicles. The account runs as follows. Sometime after the king had taken the almost impregnable Moorish fortress of Santarém, the Moorish hosts, under the command of their monarch, Albarc, in person, made a formidable attack on the city in the hope of reconquering it. At the time, Alfonso Henrique was suffering grievously from a wound in one of his legs so that he could not mount his horse. He insisted, however, on getting into a chariot and joining in the fight. It was a hazardous adventure because his death or capture would have been a serious blow to his soldiers and a source of encouragement to his enemies. However, as events proved, he was under angelic protection. A legend says he saw an arm grasping a sword, and also a wing, which showed him that an angel was with him. This sword protected the person of the king and wrought dreadful havoc among the Moors, who fled in terror, leaving the Portuguese master of the field. The Moorish captives, taken in the battle, declared that they too had seen the angel. In gratitude, the king founded a military order which he called the Order of the Wings, in honor of Saint Michael and the angels. Many noble families belong to this order, and we've seen an image of a wing and arm brandishing a sword on the coat of arms of one of the old families. We have further evidence of this devotion in the fact that Don Manuel I, one of the most remarkable of the kings of Portugal, was also most devout to the angels. So much so that he begged the Pope to sanction the feast of the Angel Guardian of Portugal and permit the office and the Mass to be said on the third Sunday of July. This feast is still celebrated. We have never heard that any other country celebrates a like feast. Vasco da Gama, the renowned discoverer who found the maritime route to India, leaves another proof of the great confidence that the Portuguese had in the holy angels. When starting on this memorable voyage to India, one of the most remarkable recorded in history, he called two of his ships after the angels, one, Saint Gabriel, because it was he who had brought to the world the great tidings of our redemption, and the Admiral too, had the wish to carry the same news of salvation to the pagan lands he hoped to discover. He called the other ship Saint Raphael, after the angel who accompanied the young Tobias on his long and dangerous journey. The admiral rightly thought that he himself could have no better guide and protector in this perilous voyage than this patron of travelers. In modern times, the Portuguese, recalling this act of Vasco da Gama, have again named two of their vessels after the archangels. The king, Cardinal de Henrique, cherished a marked love for the angels and built a church in their honor in Lisbon. The feast day was kept as a holiday of obligation in the parish. A second church was erected in honor of Saint Michael, and this feast was also observed as a holiday of obligation. In other churches of Lisbon and throughout the country, we find still further traces of this same devotion. Many of the kings of Portugal and also the royal princes took the names of Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael in baptism. In some families, the name of one of the angels is given as a second name to all the children. In one of such families, known to the writer, there was John Raphael, Mary Raphael, Thomas Raphael, James Raphael, and Anne Raphael. Luis de Sousa, O.P., one of the foremost Portuguese writers, gives us the story of the conversion of the celebrated Fray Gil, or Egidius, of Santarém, by his angel guardian. Egidius was a man of noble birth and of a devout Christian family. He himself, unfortunately, took to the study of the black arts and went to Paris in order to facilitate this study. On his way, he was induced to sell his soul to the devil in exchange for great learning. This he did by a written bond. One night when working in his laboratory, a young man mounted on a horse dashed into the chamber and, sternly rebuking him, ordered him to desist at once from his diabolical practices. Egidius was terrified and at once obeyed. Sometime after, he was again tempted by the devil, who persuaded him that this vision was merely the effect of an overheated imagination, and he resumed his studies. The horseman once more appeared, and standing over him, struck him with his lance, leaving a mark on his chest, and in a voice of anger, such as he had never heard before, commanded him to renounce these hellish arts at once and forever. Egidius, moved by this second apparition to the very depths of his soul, not only abandoned his evil ways, but did salutary penance. He returned to Portugal, where he joined the Dominican order, in which he attained to great sanctity. The same chronicler cites another example of angelic visitation. One of the fathers, eminent for holiness, by name Father Lawrence, was accosted one day when making a journey on foot by an angel who presented him with a box of relics, which he had brought from a distant town recently taken by the Saracens, and which he wished to save from desecration. These relics were for many centuries venerated in the Church of Guimarães in the north of Portugal. These few incidents go to show how deeply ingrained was the love and devotion to the holy angels in Portugal. They furnish us with a possible reason why the guardian angel of the country appeared in Fatima, for the angels generously repay all the honor we show them. Angelic apparitions in Hungary and in Ireland. As we've already observed, we know of no other country except Portugal where the angel guardian of the country has appeared in recent times. But the angels have appeared in remoter epochs in Hungary and in Ireland, both of which countries have also been very devout to the angels. Olibrio, King of Hungary. This king was deliberating on making war on the Tartars, trusting to a powerful army which he had at his disposal. A holy bishop counseled him to pray fervently before deciding on hostilities. In answer to his sincere prayer, the angel guardian of the kingdom appeared and warned him not to declare the war he had meditated on making, for, said the angel, "Your cause is not just, and you will be surely defeated. Do not trust in your army, for the angel guardian of the Tartars will fight against you, and you will be beaten, and I cannot help you in what is not just." The king very readily followed this advice and made peace with the Tartars, who gladly accepted his overtures, for in this his angel helped him. In deep gratitude, the monarch celebrated magnificent festivities in honor of the angel guardian of the kingdom, and placed an image of the angel over his crown. Thenceforward, it became the custom of the kings of Hungary to ask God's help in all matters of moment through the intercession of the angel guardian of the kingdom. The King of Ireland and the Angel. The Venerable Bede mentions that one of the kings of Ireland had great devotion to the holy angels and invoked them frequently with the greatest confidence. Unfortunately, owing to the bad advice of a false counselor, he became unpopular with his subjects, who determined to revolt against him. On learning this, the king was seriously disturbed and entertained grave fears for his life and kingdom. However, his angel guardian appeared to him radiant with joy and bade him not to fear, for he said, "Owing to your great love for me and the other angels, we have obtained from God that your princes and subjects will remain loyal and faithful to you. But do you, on your part, dismiss your false counselor and seek in all things to please our people." The king gratefully did what the angel had counseled him, with the happiest results. These two incidents teach us how our angels, though they love us dearly, will not help us if we seek to do wrong. On the other hand, they are eager to give us every possible assistance when we seek for what is just. We should beware of speaking ill or doing harm to others, for their angels will defend them and avenge them. Our Lord seems to call our attention to this fact when he warns us not to harm or scandalize children, for he says, "Their angels see the face of my Father." Saint Columba and the Angels. Saint Columba, abbot of Iona, was one of the greatest of the Irish saints. He cherished a great love for the angels who constantly visited him. Before his birth, an angel told his mother that she would bring forth a son who would take numberless souls to heaven and who would be reckoned among the prophets. He was once falsely accused of a crime he had never committed. He boldly went to the synod convoked to condemn and punish him. When the great Saint Brendan, who was present, saw him approach, he went to meet him, showing him every sign of reverence. The other members of the synod were surprised. He replied, "I saw a brilliant pillar of fire precede this man, whom you have unjustly excommunicated, and I've seen angels walking by his side." When living in the Isle of Hinba, an angel came three successive times to bid him consecrate Aidan king. He saw the soul of Brito, the monk, then the soul of a holy man called Diarmid, and later on the soul of St. Brendan borne up to heaven by angels. The demons, furious at the good he did, attacked him fiercely, but he expelled them from the island. When praying in his cell, he suddenly called out, "Help, help," for he had seen a monk fall from a high tower. The angel seized the falling monk before he reached the ground, and so saved his life. He sought out lonely places in the woods to pray, where bands of angels surrounded him. When he died, his soul mounted to heaven with innumerable angels. Chapter 2 of the book All About the Angels by Father Paul O'Sullivan. We shall now mention briefly some other angelic apparitions made to eminent servants of God in our own days. Our information is culled from various reliable sources. Saint Gemma Calgani. This dear little saint was born in 1878, died in 1903, and was canonized in 1940. She was favored, not at one time or other, but we might say constantly, by the visible presence of her angel guardian, whose radiant beauty and sweet goodness filled her with delight. She conversed lovingly with him, while he, on his part, gave her daily proofs of tender love and friendship. He was with her everywhere, at prayer, at work, in her room, when performing household duties, and even in the streets. This constant presence of her angel and his intimate communication with her were no illusion. Her confessor, who was an experienced master of the spiritual life, used all the means counseled by the church to make sure of the genuineness of these visions and apparitions. Her interviews with the dear angel were of a simple and familiar nature. She chatted with him, gazed on his face, asked him many questions, to which he replied with ineffable love and affection. He took messages from her to our Lord, to the Blessed Virgin, and the saints, and brought her back their answers. Moreover, this glorious angel took the tenderest care of his protege. He taught her how to pray and meditate, especially on the passion and sufferings of our Lord. He gave her admirable counsels and lovingly reproved her when she committed any little faults. Under his guidance, Gemma speedily reached a high degree of perfection. Once, when a wicked man uttered a horrible blasphemy in her hearing, the little saint was so horrified that she would have fallen to the ground had not the angel grasped her by the hand and consoled her by a few loving words. On another occasion, when she had delayed over long at her devotions in the church, he accompanied her home. When sick and suffering, as she frequently was, her angel ever watched by her side with unceasing care, so that she said to one of her friends, "How could I have ever borne those awful pains had it not been for the presence of my angel?" These are some of the countless beautiful incidents which her biographers relate at great length and with many interesting details regarding the delightfully familiar intercourse which existed for many years between this pious maiden and her angel guardian. This dear child was not only privileged to see and speak with her angel, but our dear Lord and his blessed mother appeared to her also and treated her with the gentlest love and affection. In order to merit these wonderful privileges, her angel sought to make her humble, pure, and full of divine love. We may not aspire, perhaps, to such visible communications with our own angel guardian, but yet Gemma Calgani teaches us a lesson of the very highest importance, that we have an angel as really and truly present with us as she had, though we do not see him. This dear angel loves us just as her angel loved her, with an immense love, and is as able and as ready to help us as her angel helped her. We would do well to ask this little saint to obtain for us the grace to feel and realize that our angel is with us. It does not matter whether we see him or not. The great thing is to know and feel that he is certainly with us and never leaves us. For further information, you may read what the saint's confessor has written about her. Saint John Bosco, was it an angel or was it a dog? The life of Don Bosco furnishes us with a remarkable and interesting story of what appears to many as angelic intervention in saving the life of the servant of God from the fierce attacks of the Waldensian heretics, who made several attempts to assassinate him. These heretics were furious at the good done by Don Bosco and sought by violent means to rid themselves of his influence. Some of their adherents were men of the lowest and most vicious type, and these they hired to carry out their nefarious designs. When returning home one night, through a bad and dangerous part of the town, he saw a magnificent dog of huge size following him. At first he was frightened, but quickly came to see that the dog was friendly. The animal walked by his side and accompanied him to the door of his house, and then went away. This happened 5, 6, or 8 times. He called the dog Grigio. What did it mean? He was soon to learn. Hastening home by himself, some time after the first appearance of the dog, 2 shots were fired at him by an assassin from behind a tree. Both shots missed their mark, but his assailant then rushed at and grappled with him. At that moment, Grigio appeared and sunk his teeth into the flesh of the would-be murderer, who fled away shrieking with pain. On a second occasion, 2 men lay in wait for him and threw a sack over his head. This time it seemed all was over with him, but Grigio unexpectedly came to his rescue and jumped at one of the ruffians, seizing him by the throat. The other fled in terror. Don Bosco had then to liberate the first from the fangs of Grigio, who still held him by the throat. A third time, no less than 12 hired assassins, armed with clubs, lay in ambush, into which Don Bosco walked unaware. Again, escape seemed impossible, but once more Grigio bounded into the midst of the group, and his fierce look and his savage growl proved enough. The men made off as quickly as they could. Sometimes the dog entered Don Bosco's house, but always with some reason, either to accompany him on a night journey or to prevent his leaving the house. No amount of animal instinct could explain these unexpected appearances of the dog. On one of these occasions, when Don Bosco tried to go out, the great dog lay across the door and growled in such a menacing way that St. John was forced to remain at home. And it was well that he did, for shortly after a gentleman arrived to warn him not to leave the house on any consideration, as the heretics lay in wait to kill him. As long as the persecution lasted, Grigio never failed to be at his post, and when the danger passed, he was seen no more. Whence he came or whither he went, no one knew. 10 years after Don Bosco had to go to a farmhouse of some friends and had been advised that the road was dangerous. "If only I had Grigio," he said. At once the great dog appeared by his side as if he had heard his words, giving signs of the greatest joy. Both man and dog arrived safely at the farmhouse and went into the dining room where the family invited Don Bosco to take part in the evening meal. The dog lay down. No one thought any more of him. When the repast was finished, the master of the house proposed to feed the dog, but he was gone. Doors and windows had been closed. How did he go? In 1883, that was more than 30 years after the dog's first appearance, he appeared once more in a different locality to guide Don Bosco, who had lost his way. How explain those wonderful appearances of the dog at the most opportune moments and in different localities? Surely, we may believe that this was angelic intervention. We will continue with All About the Angels on side B of this tape and talk about Père Lamy. Please join us.